Welcome again to the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Aline Friedman, once again to guide us through the labyrinth of crypto technology.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, you've been on the show before to explain views on cryptocurrencies across the political spectrum. But today I'd like you to talk about how these technologies are being used for non-commercial, non-profit networks worldwide and what is termed alternative social media. But first, can you comment on what has brought cryptocurrencies into the news recently with the Ethereum so-called merge and why this matters to people other than investors?
Sure. So Ethereum is the second most used blockchain after the Bitcoin blockchain. And the Ethereum merge was essentially a change in the way that this chain is governed. So instead of using a proof of work in order to verify transactions on the network, instead the Ethereum network will use a proof of stake system. It's kind of a win-win in a sense because, they're responding in some measure to critiques about the energy usage of blockchain. So this merge will significantly lower the amount of energy used to verify transactions on the network. And it should also, by that measure, increase network efficiency as well.
So, does this affect this movement around alternative social media protocols? Can you take us into that world through cryptocurrency? Are they parallel universes, or does the alternative social media movement draw in some way on these same technologies and their changes?
Sure, sometimes they do. So, kind of in parallel with blockchains, which are considered kind of a an alternative computing model to the centralized architecture that is most commonly used by the average internet user. Alternative social media projects also tend to use different or experimental architectures and cryptographic systems. Sometimes they're blockchains, but sometimes they're not. And so with blockchains becoming less energy intensive and more efficient, they might become an architecture that attracts some alternative social media projects. But in fact, alternative social media has been around almost for as long as social media itself. People who are concerned with sort of corporate control over their direct communications with friends, family, colleagues, tend to turn, or become involved directly with these alternative social media projects that use, again, these experimental architectures to, to create directly peer-to-peer systems, where, you can message, you can socialize, without any sort of corporate say or intervention into those communications.
I think often alternative social media in these spaces is associated with QAnon and the far right that attempts to evade any kind of regulatory control of the large platforms, the commercial platforms. But you're saying there is also a world of progressive social uses of these platforms or protocols or these technologies.
Yeah, precisely. So I suppose the kind of rallying cry on the right is usually, or the right-leaning libertarians is, against censorship and for free speech. Minorities and others kind of be damned in that process. But on the left, there's really a strong interest in evading the sort of capture of communication and the shaping of social relations that in fact happens through, platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And so the motivation on the left, I would say, is more about kind of reclaiming a sense of agency over the ways that we connect to each other.
So it might be useful to look at some examples to un unpack some of the abstractions here. And I think the criticism often that you have to be a pretty advanced programmer. You have a lot of you have a PhD in background in some of the technological demands of entering this world as and to understand the programming involved. So let's turn to the social media protocol Scuttlebutt as a case example of an alternative social media that grew out of critiques of platforms like Facebook and YouTube. And how does it work? And what are the technological underpinnings of it, as well as how it operates as an alternative to
Sure.
the
So,
dominant social media?
So I'll double back briefly and just say that I think the first wave of users, you could say, or maybe participants is more accurate in this sort of setting. But I think the first wave of participants after the sort of founding crew maybe was responding to these critiques. But in fact, originally the project was created by a small boat captain off the coast of New Zealand who wanted to be able to connect with his friends and his direct social network in sort of an offline first capacity.
This
And
is
so
Scuttlebutt.
this is Scuttlebutt, exactly. And Scuttlebutt is in fact kind of some seafaring jargon. But anyway, we wanted to be able to connect offline first, which is also a really important affordance of these alternative social media networks, is that many of them are tailored to operate offline, which can be really helpful for communities that don't have reliable internet access.
And there are playful aspects of Scuttlebutt and some of these other emerging alternative social media that it'd be interesting to take up. But a term that's been used in describing the potential of these alternative social media protocols is prefigurative politics, a term that has a long history in the left, particularly the new left of the 60s and 70s, that emphasize experimental communities and creating possibilities for reimagining and reorganizing social relations in a way that anticipates a society that as yet cannot be realized. So if you were to work with that definition of prefigurative politics, to what extent is a protocol or platform like Scuttlebutt prefigurative in some way?
I think the term fits quite well actually with Scuttlebutt because I'm thinking also of the notion of a temporary autonomous zone or like a sort of temporary utopia in the way that Occupy was sometimes considered. And so essentially and especially for people who grew up online or who use the internet primarily in their work and their play, these same concepts apply to online spaces as well. And if you think of the social intentions of these platforms is to connect to people that you enjoy and who you want to spend time with, it's kind of like on Facebook, for example, it's almost like we're invited to do that. It's like hanging out with your friends and family in a Walmart, and the feeling of that industrial lighting, and being sold something everywhere you turn, not knowing what you'll kind of be presented with. These sorts of issues, like in alternative social media spaces like Scuttlebutt, there's a lot more possibility to kind of jump in as a participant, as a user, and express what it is you think, like how the protocol should be organizing communications, like what should be visible that other people are doing, and what should be kept private, So a lot of the I would say the prefigurative aspect of these protocols, primarily like Scuttlebutt, is being able to have some sort of a voice or some sort of say, like a place to actually have opinions, not just about social issues, or unrelated things, but to actually jump in and have a voice about the way that the social space itself is organized. What's visible, what's invisible, what content is moderated and how. So, this participant ability to govern the platform is kind of like a, it feels a lot like participating in like a model UN or something, but this is just the governance of your online social space.
And there is a recognition of the white male dominance of these technologies and ease in entering these spaces. And I know with Scuttlebutt and I think a few of the other protocols, there's an emphasis on work that not only contributes at the level of programming, but something called gardening, social gardening, people who attend to or care for the demands on people entering into the spaces or entering into these sites.
Yeah, precisely. So a lot of a lot of the roles that sometimes on large scale platforms are they're automated or they are just like programming, they're kind of like for hire within the company. These are more like volunteer positions that need to be taken on in these alternative social media settings, right? So doing things like inviting more people in. That tends to be like a much more intimate social process, than kind of having a cookie on a website that assigns you a Facebook page, whether you like it or not. Doing things like on large platforms, often content moderation is automatic, and it kind of comes from on high. Maybe there's a banned word list that gets executed. And if a user posts something that has the banned word in it, the post gets taken down automatically. In these settings, there are no such automated systems. So it kind of falls to the human beings who are tasked with, deliberating over whether something is appropriate or inappropriate, or even, going through a conflict resolution process with people who are having a heated debate on the platform.
And this seems to be related to another dilemma that has been discussed in some of the literature on Scuttlebutt and similar alternative social media is the question of should the platform scale up? What happens when you move from a small group where some of these problems can be worked out to a larger groups that not only present a critique of capitalism and its growth imperative of constantly pressing for growth and expanding its reach, but also social movements try to expand their reach and move from small parochial settings to people coming together, forming alliances across differences, and more people involved. So, what challenges do you think that form of scaling up in the sense of building social movements pose for these alternative social media?
Yeah, so I mean, this is such a rich issue, right? Like, there's so much involved in scaling up, and this is really maybe where you get the tension between movement politics, where you just want more people to join to press for your cause. In the case of alternative social media, it would be kind of inviting the average user to exit these large-scale corporate platforms that ultimately don't really, do much to protect public interest or to foster public benefit. And you get this tension with, between movement politics and prefigurative politics, which, it's just so much easier to govern something in a small group, right? Like when you have to scale up your governance processes, people end up getting a little bit farther away from the work itself. You have to balance, many voices, and these things that are challenges, I think, in all political movements. But in particular, when it comes to, a technology platform, like Scuttlebutt, the temptation is to handle greater scale using automation. And in a lot of ways, I think there's fear of automating processes, even though that would maybe make it easier to bring a lot of people onto the platform. But that fear is that what makes these exciting spaces and what makes these really enjoyable places to be in is, the sort of participatory culture that's fostered, right? So when you start having decisions being executed automatically, rather than deliberated upon, you start kind of losing the intimacy and the social richness of these spaces, which is, this isn't just like a sort of neutral place for us to communicate. This is a space that we're all responsible for taking care of. We're responsible for the space, we're responsible for each other. And so when you start automating processes that sort of get in between those relationships, there's something of a loss in the experiment itself, you could even say.
I wonder if this also becomes both qualitatively and quantitatively different as you expand, so that, Facebook is a place where, I share news and announcements about upcoming demonstrations and political events, but people can share a picture of the family going to Disneyland with their grandmother. It's like an all-purpose. That's, I guess, the notion of the Walmart town square. But it seems that people who are drawn to all sorts of alternative social media mainly come together out of a, I guess, a democratic ethos, an interest in the technological aspects or the process aspects of this, and don't have what I can discern as a shared set of politics. I mean, maybe that's okay, but is there enough there to bind people together over time to work through some of these prefigurative possibilities?
Yeah, it is a shared, so people may not have identical political views, right? And it's not necessarily like a political movement in itself, but it still abides by the sort of law of the growth of social networks, which is people's friends and then their friends of friends and then friends of friends of friends join, right? So essentially people are still bound by an interest in hanging out with the people who are already there, posting and chatting and this sort of thing. So there is kind of a limit, like a natural limit on the diversity of the people who join, because you're going to be socially connected, in some kind of person-to-person way with someone else who's already there, kind of enjoying the topics of conversation. And you tend to get quite niche discussions on these alternative social media boards, I'll say. Like, it's not always just talking about the platform, but people who tend to gather there. You see some of the interest coming out. Like, there's a solar punk discussion forum, and there are people chatting about, ways to decrease their carbon footprint, like sharing tips about, how to cool their homes more efficiently in the summer, things like this. So, they'll talk about festivals that they're going to or weird upcoming artists that they're interested in. So, you get this sort of cultural richness that suggests something, suggests political similarities maybe, but that aren't focused on it as a sort of first principle.
Well, these could be examples of what many cite in critiquing experimental communities or transition projects or autonomous zones, is that they flourish alongside the dominant system of capitalism, and happily so. In fact, can reinforce capitalism by seeming to allow for harmless. It's like the vacation is as the way that makes the grinding, boring, alienating work world of work possible, that you can take a vacation a few weeks a year. So it's just a kind of breathing space that is not really a challenge to Facebook or the corporate dominated media, because it's in many ways it can be seen as reinforcing it through offering kind of these breathing spaces as all alternatives that don't organize in any way a challenge to it. I mean, even the focus on individual actions that reduce your carbon footprint, as opposed to challenging the dominance of the fossil fuel industry worldwide that is crushing us.
It's really a question of sort of different or competing intentions here, and I think you were right to bring up scale early on, right? Because there's I think there's an unresolved fear in this movement that if you become, as big as the giants, it's the size itself that creates some of the negative or pernicious qualities that we're trying to fight against, right? So, the fact that this it's a kind of release valve, as you're describing, is I think that's okay for a lot of participants. Their relationships with people who are, they connect with primarily through these protocols are very real. Right. And when you lose that sort of space, like when your social media protocol becomes a platform and it becomes a loudspeaker, right? Really, a profit interest has stripped your ability to foster your social relationships. So it's possible that, these sorts of protocols come before, the development of large scale social movements, like they're sort of the more intimate relational fabric that nevertheless happens at a distance that makes it possible to form strong international or even global solidarity in the first place, right? Like if you don't have that protected space to form a relationship, it becomes really difficult to embark on larger and more intentional sort of political interventions with
So there's
others.
still many tests to be had over the uses of these technologies in political organizing spaces, just as there have been for Facebook and other uses of social media and movement building, some of which have subverted the aims of corporations that control them. But also have imposed limits. So let's continue to follow these projects. And there's a social psychological aspect of these technologies, as well as a political and technical aspect. So I think that will be interesting for us to continue to follow as psychologists as well as activists.
Yeah, I look forward to continuing this conversation. There's so much here, really.
Well, thank you so much, Emmeline Friedman, for being with us on the Old Mole today, talking about crypto technology and alternative social media.
Thanks for having me.